Okay. All right. This is kind of part two of what we discussed, and Mark and I have been talking about this for quite a while, identifying where the gaps exist in the knowledge and in the data. And what I want to do for you this afternoon in the series of about 10 or 12 slides is just review the concept of efficiency as it has been traditionally approached in the feedlot or the young growing animal phases and sector, and try to make some inference based on a very limited amount of data so far on the mature cow herd and possibly some comments about replacement heifers as well. I have to recognize John Bizarab, who is a collaborator, provincial employee that works at the Lacombe Research Center, just a couple of hours north of Calgary, who's provided me with some graphs and some data and is a valuable collaborator on this topic. We both work in concert with the Alberta Bovine Genomics Group, which is a tripartite agreement between Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada at the federal level, AFRD, or the provincial research arm in agriculture in Alberta, and the University of Alberta in Edmonton, under the umbrella of the Institute of Food and Animal Sciences, Alberta. So let's start with some background. The majority of the research, as we discussed earlier, has an application addressing feed efficiency, and the concept of efficient feed utilization has been directed at feeder calves and at bulls. A large preponderance of that data is focused that way, especially the stuff that leads to useful comments and insights about genetic evaluation improvement. Genetic connections or inference to the mature cow herd or the standing cow herd have largely been indirect. Now, there are some exceptions to that. For example, in Australia, they have a study conducted where they measured efficiency as residual feed intake in feedlot heifers or heifers developing replacement heifers in a dry lot. They remeasured those same females a couple of years later after they'd had a couple of calves and found the genetic correlation between those was extremely high, suggesting that within animal, at least on the female side, this concept of residual feed intake was highly genetically repeatable. Efficient cows do tend to produce more efficient calves and vice versa, and we'll get into some of that as I present some of the data that we have. It sort of, to me, underscores the that we need a robust measure of efficiency. And by robust, I mean a methodological approach or a conceptual way of defining efficient feed utilization which is applicable and has useful and value across animal segments and production types like bulls, cows, and steers. Okay. The use of this measure in genetic improvement will have to have other components, other characteristics, and there will be other considerations beyond just understanding the biology of efficient utilization. And in that, we will have to go through the steps of verifying things such as heritability, genetic variance, and the opportunity for making genetic gains on data and selection intensity. Okay? And obviously, we want to minimize antagonism. And I hope I'm going to give you a fairly convincing line of comments about this conceptual approach to defining efficiency, which will alleviate some of those concerns. Data collection will also be an issue that I want to spend some time on. We know that most of the problems associated with making a whole lot of progress in a short time on a system like this that's as biologically complex as it is because we have a hard time collecting good data. So let's review the RFI methodology. As a trait, what has been defined in the literature as residual feed intake, synonymously referred to as net feed intake or net feed efficiency, has very desirable properties. But for the cow, again, we emphasize RFI not so much as a stable phenotype or a trait, but as a methodological approach. The general definition of net feed efficiency, or RFI as I prefer, across the world is just a simple difference between what we would actually measure in terms of intake subtracted from or differentiated from intake expected based on production and other identifiable energy sinks. Okay? The expectation part of that equation comes from simply measuring predictors of intake, such as body weight gain, the composition of that gain, and possibly some other factors. And those of you who were able to listen to Dr. Merlin Nielsen, Dr. Gordon Carson's yesterday afternoon in the Selection Decisions Committee, they did a very intense job of defining RFI for you. Okay, in young growing cattle, when you look at this approach, we can use that list of predictors that really boil down to body size, growth rate on test, and body composition in terms of ultrasonic fat and muscle differences. We can account for about 70% of the variance in intake, which means by subtraction that 30% of the variance in intake is left over as what we define as RFI, residual feed intake, and it's really accounting for or attributable to systems that we cannot identify or can't measure directly. Preliminary results would indicate using this same approach without backing up and using a more conceptual view of the problem that cow intake is less predictable than is intake in a young growing animal, whether it be a steer or a bull. Okay? Some of our research would indicate that using that classic model but adding in an adjustment factor for the weight of the fetus that she's carrying will still only count for about 30 to 40% of the variance in intake. Now, this suggests that there's a lot of potential to identify energy sink systems in cows that we haven't thought about yet, and that there may be a lot of potential for improvement, especially given that the cow is the probably supplementation of the cow is one of the most expensive non-fixed costs of beef production. Okay, just to show you one of the desirable properties of this concept of residual feed intake is that we can force this phenotype, we can force this trait to be independent of anything we want it to be, which is nice when you consider that this is a method that allows us to minimize antagonisms under selection. Here's a graph that John provided me. And what he's done here is he has plotted, is RFI on the y-axis, Mark? Yeah. Okay, on the y-axis we have this residual feed intake measure. By nature, all groups have a mean of zero. Animals with an RFI greater than zero are eating more than we would expect based on their production level, and therefore are wasters or less efficient, whereas animals with negative RFI are those who are eating less than we would expect based on their level of production, and therefore more efficient. And if you plot residual feed intake against metabolic body size and average daily gain, you see that we have forced those to be kind of shotgun patterns, which is a nice way of saying there's no correlation between them. We've made them independent. Okay? Some steer work that we have done, and this is a data set that I've added to quite significantly, but I just wanted to get an idea. If we separated the efficient and the inefficient steers, how much of a real practical difference that might be translatable into some dollar differences could we really see? Well, in terms of intake per day in pounds, we see that the more efficient steers are eating about 4 pounds less per day. This was over an 85-day feeding period. And I think if you go back, this study is based on about 600 head. So it's a fairly good sample. And both Angus and Charlay would be involved in this. Okay, total intake allows you to get a better perspective from like an entire finishing period point of view, where you take that 4 pound per day difference and expand it out over 184 days, where you see 2,400 pounds worth of difference in the amount of consumption, Now, in terms of body weight gain, we don't really see any differences between the efficient and the inefficient steers. Again, that reemphasizes the independence of RFI from production. Feeding events per day, this is a behavioral component that we can measure using the technology that we have at Lethbridge and at Lacombe and at Edmonton. We can actually measure the number of times an animal visits the bunk per day. And we find that these more efficient cattle are visiting the bunk quite a bit less. Carcass fatness, once this feeding trial was over, we collected normal carcass data and found, similar to other studies in the U.S., in Canada, and in Australia, that there is nothing more than a trend, but it is a very consistent trend for the efficient cattle to produce carcasses, at least in terms of subcutaneous fat, that are a little bit leaner. And lean yield percentage is no different. And marbling score is no different between these groups. Okay, so it looks like, based on these data, that we've got a fairly desirable trait, at least in the feedlot sector, that we might like to take a deeper look at. Well, one of the first questions that folks like Mark and I ask is, you know, we've all got our own biases about what makes a good trait in terms of national cattle evaluation, and what properties do those kinds of traits have, and ask the question, how does residual feed intake stack up on that list? Now, Mark, tell me if I'm wrong here. These are the things that I look at when I think of getting a really good, stable, sound genetic evaluation and producing EPDs for a group. I like traits that have a direct effect on either cost or income, so that it's easy to put economic weights or penalties associated with those EPDs. We all like things that are easy to measure. I like stable genetic parameters. I like for there not to be any huge differences in the heritability. I don't want a quotation mark around heritability estimate for the trait I'm looking at. I want it to be pretty constant. I need a trait that's got high data density. That means it's easy to collect, and we can build accuracy and accumulate accuracy pretty quickly on the animals that are relevant to the population. We want to minimize genetic antagonism. That is, if we select for this trait, or if we include this trait in our multiple trait approach to genetic improvement, we're not harming another economically relevant trait in that process. We'd like to measure it early in life so we can produce that EPD and get that information on genotype as quickly as possible. We like user-friendly EPDs. That is, bigger is better. You know, more is better. Easy to explain, do education and tech transfer, and large genetic variance. That means there's a big difference in the genetic separation or the genotypic value of animals available for selection, so we can make progress very quickly. How does RFI stack up? Here's my opinion of how RFI answers all of these questions. Yeah, direct income. Remember, intake and residual feed intake are both measures of intake. Okay? We haven't done anything special when we convert from raw or dry matter intake on a daily basis to residual feed intake. We're just identifying that part of intake that we can't predict by measuring something else. And I don't think there's anybody here that would argue that intake, whether it's from a measurable source or from an unmeasurable source, I think we would all agree intake definitely affects cost. Okay? Easily measured? No, quite frankly, not at all. It's expensive, it's time-consuming, and there's a lot of variable questions that have to be answered. Stable genetic parameters? Yes. Heritability for residual feed intake in Canada, in the U.S., in Australia, in France. Help me out, Rod. Where else? England, the U.K. Everywhere that I've seen a paper, it ranges between 0.32 and 0.41. So right in there with growth, very similar. High data density? No. Oop, hang on. Let's don't go that far yet. High data density? No. because it's not easily measured and it's expensive to measure. Little genetic antagonism. Yes, we can basically force it to be independent of anything we want. The only requirement is that it has to have a covariance with intake, and we have to measure the antagonism. Measured early in life, yeah, at least in the classic context, bulls and steers are going to be measured at or about a year of age. And that's similar to what we measure other bull traits, carcass traits, like yearling weight, scrotal circumference, and ribeye area fat, and so forth. EPDs are user-friendly, sort of, yeah. They're continuous, that's nice. And directional selection is probably fairly clear. You just have to remember that negative RFI is better. And lastly, large genetic variance. Yes, there's very little evidence from either a quantitative, that is phenotypic and pedigree, or a genomic approach that would suggest that any selection has been effectively practiced for residual feed intake. So there's a lot of untapped genetic variance there, probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 to 7 pounds a day. Okay, some other comments. You can read through those. Again, RFI is just an adjusted intake, which verifies that, yes, it is a cost-income variable. Requiring feed intake is a limitation. We don't really worry about antagonism as long as we can measure those traits with which it's antagonistic. We can adjust it. And more than 30% of the variance in intake is this residual component. And 30% is fairly economically significant. So, when you calculate RFI, what are some of the genetic correlations with other traits that we're perhaps a little more used to looking at? Well, feed conversion ratio, the classic. We indicate here that two Australian studies we followed up in North America, both in Canada and in the U.S., with some studies that confirm these numbers. There's a high positive correlation between feed conversion ratio and RFI. But it is not perfect, so they are not the same trait. RFI is positively correlated with feed intake. That means selection for RFI would, in the negative and favorable direction, would likely result in animals that eat less. And again, we see that minor correlation between RFI and back fat, suggesting that the leaner animals are those that are more efficient. Obviously, that genetic correlation was taken from a data set that didn't adjust RFI for body composition. Live weight, positive association there. That result has become a little suspicious because we can adjust that out. An average daily gain, almost nothing. And I think what Paul Arthur's paper here, this is some Charolais data that he collected in France. I think this emphasizes that the difference between adjusting intake at a phenotypic level versus adjusting at a genetic level. You do this phenotypic adjustment procedure that I've already described, and you still have to be cognizant that there can be genetic covariances that still exist. But that's okay because we've worked out the math on doing the genetic adjustment too. What about some more carcass? These are preliminary and based on fairly small numbers, but Flavio Schinkel at Guelph has published a fairly good study showing a correlation between RFI and ribeye area, and we did a study on a smaller number of animals that shows a correlation between marbling score and RFI in the favorable direction. Okay, don't put a whole lot of stock in those. The standard errors are really big. Okay, potential. Translate these results to potential industry impact. Our results show, at least at the steer level, that a concept like this allows us to partition steer calves into these efficient and less efficient groups where we can make them perform the same. Okay, they will perform the same in terms of weight gain, carcass merit, quality grade, and so forth, but the more efficient half required about 400 pounds less of feed to do that with. Okay. In southern Alberta, I did a wildly gross extrapolation on this one little study of 1,000 head to a region in what Albertans call Feedlot Alley right around Lethbridge. We feed about 2.3 million head a year. It's the fifth largest feeding region in North America. You extrapolate that, you get 780 million pounds of feed that costs $40 million that is represented in the difference between those RFI groups. Now, we're going to start making some leaps of faith here in saying that estimates are that relative savings in supplemental feeding for the cow herd will be comparable in magnitude to the ones that we've estimated for steers, especially in the northern climates where supplementation periods are longer. What about efficiency in cows? Can this information, can this body of research that's been primarily devoted to steers and bulls be teach us anything or give us any direction about defining this trait in cows? And somewhat jokingly, I try to remember two principles. For every complex problem, there's always a simple solution that doesn't work. And what I'm getting at here is it's quite possible that the consensus opinion may indeed be that RFI in steers and RFI in cows is not, in fact, the same biological or genetic trait. Okay? But I think we can still take some valuable lessons from the conceptual approach that I've described. What should cow efficiency do? Well, as a trait, I don't really honestly believe that we would ever get to the point where we would be producing a large number of data-dense cow efficiency EPDs. But we would like for it to retain the desirable properties of the RFI concept, and that is specifically to minimize antagonisms. And the ones that jump to mind, especially in the cow arena, are antagonisms with reproduction, productive longevity, and maintenance requirements. But cow efficiency as an indicator trait or as a predictor trait that we use in our evaluation systems should not be antagonistic to what we're trying to select for in the feeder calf sector. Okay? And we will probably accommodate this in a procedure where we treat RFI across different animal types, potentially as separate but correlated traits. Okay, I'm going to draw you a graph here that sort of outlines my thinking when I start making the transition between efficiency in a growing animal and efficiency in a mature animal. We have feed intake, which is conceptually fairly easy to think about. It's not very easy to measure sometimes. Okay, and the heart of defining efficiency, whether it be for biological reasons or for purposes of genetic improvement, involves identifying where that intake goes. What is it doing? Okay, in steers, I've reviewed for you that if you can measure average daily gain, live weight, and body composition over the feeding period, you can account for about 70% of the variance in that intake that you're paying for, which leaves that other 30% that we have less of a handle and less information about where it's going, or about 30%. So let's shift to the cow. Still have intake. We measure things like live weight, body weight change, and the weight of the calf that she's carrying as a proxy for the energy that's being consumed or used to support fetal development, and we're accounting for about 30%, sometimes as much as 40% of that intake variance, which leaves 70% that we still have yet to get a good handle on. This is a pretty good diagram, I think, that at least starts us thinking or supports the notion that perhaps RFI or this concept is not exactly equivalent in cows as it is in growing animals. So what do we know? What can we say about this whole selection issue? We have collected quite a bit of intake data, and that database is growing. But the one I wanted to specifically tell you about is very practical in nature, a study that we've done in Alberta, where we've tested a fairly large number of steers out of one of our experimental populations, and we've categorized those steers as low, medium, and high in terms of RFI, low being more efficient, medium being pretty much average, high being high RFI or inefficient. And we went backwards and put those same labels on their mothers. Okay? So on those 130 cows that we were able to identify, we could go back as far as 10 years worth of productivity on those cows. We tested some of them in our feedlot for residual feed intake and asked the simple question, what can we say about these cows that have produced these inefficient or efficient steer progeny in terms of reproduction, condition, intake, and the performance of their calves over their productive life? This is very much a retrospective study, but it's an easier one to do when you're first getting into this. Okay? Mothers of the steers with the efficient or low RFI calves, they had a higher 10-year average body condition score. And when I see a data point like this, it puts me in mind of the old cattleman's phrase, easy keeper. She just maintains that because as we look back through these historical production records, these cows were not fed differently according to their RFI category because we assigned that sort of after the fact. They were all given access to the same supplementation regime, and we still find that the more efficient mothers tend to hold a little better body condition score. The subsample of those cows out of each RFI group that we put back on a high forage diet in our GrowSafe system did have lower high forage diet intake, and they calved about 5 days later than the low efficiency cows within a fixed calving season. Okay? Possible negative there. Possible, slightly not such a desirable result, but again, needs to be replicated in a larger study. What can we say specifically about the high RFI or the inefficient steers about their mothers? These cows, over their 10-year history, had twice the death loss and about 4% twins, whereas there were zero twins observed in the mothers of the high efficiency or low RFI females. So more death loss, more twins. Those are probably related results, which is why I put them in the same comment there. No differences were observed among the mothers of these steers in different RFI groups on the basis of pregnancy rate, calving rate, weaning rate per cow exposed, or the ultimate 205-day weights of their calves. So that should not surprise you. Performance and production, what we're saying with this last comment is those calves that out of these cows are growing about the same amount, and their reproduction is not showing any antagonism with, at least suggestively, with this concept of RFI. Okay, now the more important questions, what don't we know? Well, we still deal with the idea that we're only explaining about 30% of the intake variance in these cows when we put them through and measure intake. We can only identify predictors or other traits that are measurable that account for about 30%. What should be added to that to increase that prediction? And I'm going to suggest that our approach has been to go back to the classic research in the early 60s from Nebraska, where this concept was first defined in cattle, and use the old energy sink concept that Dr. Cook had to identify those predictors. We're still battling with the question of to what extent does efficiency in any form correlate across animal type. Okay, so we're dealing potentially with data and records that'll come from bulls and steers, but also replacement heifers and cows. Each of these may have their own subtle genetic differences. What can we learn from replacement heifers? Reports seem to verify that you can measure RFI or efficiency using this approach in young females, and that translates very well to intake and other properties of efficiency of those same females later and closer to maturity. To me, defining this concept of efficiency is still only intermediate in cows, in bulls, in steers, or whatever, because regardless of the animal type, I think we need to remember that efficiency and intake are important parts of a larger multiple trait system that we have to keep in mind. That's a fancy way of saying don't do single trait selection. The genetic association of cow efficiency measurements with reproductive longevity, heifer pregnancy rate, mature maintenance requirement, and some of the concepts that have been discussed and probably even founded conceptually in this very committee still need to be worked out. How reliably can we measure cow intake, behavioral size, diet constitution, putting cows in dry lot, pregnancy status, all present a unique set of challenges when we consider trying to measure intake in cows. And, you know, it's sometimes a little bit easy to say, well, you can't put cows in a dry lot because, yeah, you can measure intake, but it's not really what cows eat. Cows don't live in dry lots. Well, in response to that, I say, find me an easy way to measure intake on cows on range, and that's the way we'll do it. Okay? The major limitation remains this bottleneck that I've reemphasized all afternoon, that limiting on efficiency research in any animal type is the collection of individual intake data. And, you know, there are models out there that we can use to predict intake. They work quite remarkably well in steers as long as you have a lot of data on the predictors. But that eliminates the potential to use this RFI concept as an approach to characterize efficiency. And it relies completely upon average relationships of those predictors with actual intake in a research setting. And the genetic architecture may quite well be dissimilar between measured intake and predicted intake. So there are some limitations there. And I've taken up a lot of your time. If there's one thing you take away from this is, my God, I never knew Cruz knew so little about efficiency. So with that, thank you very much for your attention.
Okay, I'm going to make a statement and see if I understand what you just presented correctly.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Was it that bad?
No, it wasn't that bad. I just want to make sure my logic is correct before I open it to questions from other people. The most efficient calves had mothers that, on average, had the best body condition score, higher than average body condition score, lending some reinforcement to what Don said earlier, mm-hmm. and yet they had no differences in weaning weight of calf.
That's right.
Which would indicate to me that milk production differences in those cows were not explaining the differences in body condition score. Would you agree with that?
Possibly true. Again, another part of the take-home message.
That's a little bit biased question because, you know, I'm at CSU. We do a maintenance energy eating cows, and what do we put in? We put in mature weight milk production.
Right.
Trying to decide how much of that difference in cow efficiency we actually...
I think that's an excellent question, Mark, and it presents a research challenge because typically you would not measure intake. None of the studies that have been conducted to date are measuring intake in cows with calves at side. They're measuring cows during second trimester of pregnancy. There are problems associated with phenotypic assessment of milk production, whether it be whey suckle whey or or automated milkers on cattle in a squeeze chute. There are some potential ways to answer your question if we can blup intake and then blup a series of predictors where then milk potential of that cow is an easy input into that prediction equation, but we're doing RFI on a genetic level at that point. I have a hard time believing that energy is not being partitioned to some extent to, you know, actively support milk production or at least actively maintain the system that's gearing up for milk production in a cow that's gestating. Do you agree with that? That's an obvious one.
Okay, sorry, I got my questions out of the way first. Sorry. My question is a bit related, and maybe you said this, but apparently then we don't have genetic correlations between RFI and maintenance in cows. Is that correct?
Nothing's been published to my directly to sort of the classic CSU definition of heifer pregnancy or mature maintenance requirement.
Including stability. Nothing with stability as well.
Not that I'm aware of. We've got some correlations out of Australia with the maternal components of growth. There's some of the earlier work that Paul Arthur published, for example, has steer RFI correlations with maternal 200-day weight and maternal 400-day weight. Gordy, those were pretty low, weren't they? Yeah.
And as another follow-up, it's a bit related to Mark's question, but your relationship between RFI and body condition, average body condition of the mothers, just give us some idea of the strength of that data. What kind of numbers are you talking about? What kind of power do you have there?
Let's see. There's 130 cows. And approximately equal numbers in each of the RFI groups. So there'd be 40 to 42 head in the category that is the mothers of low, medium, and highly efficient steers. And so you're looking at that 130 cows over a 10-year cycle preceding but including the parturition that produced the steers on which the RFI measurements were made. So what you're talking about, 50, I think it's something on the order of 12 or 1300 mating opportunities over 10 years. Does that answer what you were after? Yeah, thanks for making that point, Rod, because when I put that data up, I said they measured them as heifers and then they measured them again after they've had a couple of calves, and that genetic correlation was 0.95, which means, yes, they do rank very similarly. What I forgot to mention was when they put them back in as cows, they were non-pregnant.
The answer to Gordon's question. When you say higher body condition score, half a higher body condition score?
On a five-point scale, you're talking about 2.9 versus 3.3, 3.4.
That's on a
five-point scale. Yeah, the Canadians, for some reason,
why...
Yeah, it's a pretty significant difference on average. The Canadians, for some reason, prefer the five-point to the nine-point scale.
I have a question about... you talked about when you were to measure or estimate the efficiency of a cow, you would adjust for the size of the fetus or the weight of the fetus. Mm-hmm. How would you determine the weight of the fetus and what stage of pregnancy, and how would you account for the growth of that fetus?
Okay, that's a very good question. Back in the... I'm gonna say this wrong, but I'm gonna estimate 70s, 80s, because that research went. Merlin, when was it done? That, okay, published in 76, but there was some follow-up on that later. Some research at Clay Center was used to establish an asymptotic model that maps the growth of a normal beef calf fetus. And you can basically apply that function using birth weight and back up along that asymptotic curve and get the weight, estimated weight of the fetus at any point during gestation. Is that a synopsis that's reasonable, Merlin? Okay. And that's how weight of the fetus was accounted for in this work. Yeah, these were mostly controlled breeding season and or AI mating, so we knew date of conception. We obviously knew date of birth, so we could back up within a day or two of being accurate.
Danny, I'm a little bit surprised on the only explaining 30% of the variability in intake when you account for the predictor variables. These are all ad-lib.
All ad lib. Diet density was a little bit low, but I think part of the biological explanation was that we kept these cows on a diet that would be typical of a supplementation diet that they would get on range. Now, if you go back and again use the steer scenario as sort of an indication of how things ought to be, you do that stepwise regression in a normal RFI model and about 60, 59, 58, maybe as low as 55% of that intake variance comes out immediately as average daily gain. When you put these cows on a maintenance diet, even though it's ad lib, they're still not gaining. So that's an obvious energy sink that's smaller. And I don't know if that really clarifies or just confuses me even more, but it seems like a possible explanation. In the back.
When do they take body condition scores on the cows?
It was a series of, it was an average body condition score at every time we worked the cows. So calving, breeding, and then some other management points, like when they go out on range or whatever. So it was a multiple, I don't know what the average would be, maybe 3 to 4 condition scores per year per cow.
Again, on one of your early slides, where you showed on the steer data, you showed number of meals per day and then the intake.
Yes.
If I did my math right, the meals are almost exactly the same size between the two groups. The only difference is the number of meals taken.
That's possibly true. I haven't done that math, Twig. I'd have to refamiliar.
It's about 3.9 pounds per meal. It's about 1/10 of a pound difference, I think, if I got the numbers right off the deal. The question I really want to get to, though, is one of the last things you said, that if we use a prediction equation to use to set as our standard instead of using a residual feed intake from a regression equation, the predicted equations that you would use, like if you used NRC 2000, the revised edition, that is the average of a population of a very large population of cattle. So why wouldn't that be appropriate to use to compare the cattle to instead of having to compare within your group?
I think research has suggested there's a couple of reasons. First of all, you kind of said it. It is an average, so therefore it works real good on average, but not real good individually. Is that what you would find as well? And also, if you predict intake using NRC being the most popular approach to predicting intake on the back end of that RFI equation, a lot of the statistical properties that are really desirable about RFI go away. Contemporary groups no longer have an average of zero, and other genetic properties go away too. There's several studies that, and one of Paul Arthur's, in fact, computes RFI in two different ways, with a within animal aggression approach, as well as using NRC or something similar to do the back end prediction of that and shows that they are genetically different traits. They are, the phenotypic and genetic architecture is somewhat different.
Yeah, you answered a question about when the body condition scores are taken. I was just wondering if looking at the change in those body condition scores between, say, prior to calving versus at a wean, if that would help to explain any of the maintenance requirements in cows.
Possibly, and I have to admit there's some aspects of this data analysis that we're still trying to pick through and answer questions such as that one. So, sorry, I can't give you – that's a good point, and I'll certainly suggest that.
One other question on a different topic, though.
Okay.
On your earlier discussion, you said that taking feed intake 35 to 40 days was enough time for us to measure residual feed intake.
Actual intake. Yep. I mean, if you get actual intake, you can get to residual, yes.
So you're at, so you're saying that on the 70-day feed test, and we can test two groups of bulls possibly, or is taking it over the first 35 days of a 70-day gain test the same as taking over the second 35 days of a gain test?
Are you asking sort of like switching bulls in and out of a grow safe facility or something? I don't think that research has been done. I don't know if we can answer that question or not. It has been asked in quite a bit at this meeting. Like, one way to amortize the expense of this equipment and these facilities is, do the growth tests longer, but only put them in the facility to measure intake for the minimum amount of time that they require, and you can increase the number of cycles that you can do in a year. I think within reason, there's evidence that would suggest, or there's no evidence to suggest you couldn't do it that way. But as the ages get more disparate, problems may exist with that approach. Brian?
Danny, one of the concerns with RFI is related to that relationship with back fat. Mm-hmm. You're dealing with two very different biological types of cows. Is that relationship the same both with the Charolais and with the Angus?
Oh, I should have pointed out. I said one of our research populations. This is not the Angus Charolais at 1-4 that we had. These are the composites that are at Lacombe. So we didn't really have power in the data to make any comments on breed effect.
Daniel, we've done one study comparing RFI and growing cattle that are rugged diet versus finishing cattle that are high-grain diet. I know you've done several
similar
of those kind of studies. The Australians have also recently acknowledged that RFI in growing cattle is different than RFI in finishing cattle. And I wanted you to comment on that, and then relative to the topic today, we're thinking about RFI technology and how to use that to end up with efficient cows. Mm-hmm. If we're going to look at bull tests and measure RFI in bulls, should we give some consideration to the kind of diet that we're feeding those bulls? Do you think measuring RFI on a high ruggish diet would be preferable if we know those bulls are going to be targeting replacement females, for example?
Well, in terms of energy density, it seems to me that the outlier diet is the steer finishing diet. There may be more compositional and chemical similarities among a supplemental silage fed cows, a high forage or a high silage diet fed a performing bull, and that you might feed a growing potential replacement heifer. Although differences do exist in how much energy they put in bull diets on post-weaning performance tests, and a wide range of that. Now, the earliest suggestions are that we get some amount of re-ranking to the extent of about a 0.75 to 0.70 genetic correlation between RFI expressed on animals eating a growing diet versus those same animals eating a finishing diet, which suggests that there are some diet by genotype influences on the expression of phenotypic RFI. Now, in the classic sense, we can handle that in a genetic model, which just treats them as different traits. because we would just differentiate where the data is coming from and make sure that we estimated and re-estimated those correlations between those expressions, because that's really what it is, just a genetic correlation that reflects expression differences that may suggest an underlying biological difference. The problem in this scenario is that a majority of our data will probably come from just a subset of all the possible sources that will be required to keep stable estimates of those parameters in that model. And I don't think we know the answer of how best to deal with the fact that a lot of our data, at least initially, is probably going to come from bulls, but we really want to predict differences in their daughters that are going to become replacements and their sons that are going to go to the feedlot. So that's an issue. And it may turn out to be, to a large extent, a scaling.
Collecting the individual feed intake, impossible on a ranch situation. We always, every year, winter our cows on about 92% of what their recommendations would be. Save only those cows that breed back, and then select our heifers primarily based on what percentage of their body weight, of their mother's body weight, then we know. Are we going to make any strides in lowering RFI by doing that? And especially, I guess, we're going to start putting some bulls through a grow safe thing next fall. Can we do that with the cows, plus add in bulls that we have the RFI actually calculated? What kind of progress are we going to make under that situation?
That's an interesting scenario and probably quite a typical one, where basically, if I understood your statement properly, you've got an estimate of cow output in terms of, you know, the weight of their calves, and you express it as a percentage of their body weight, and you do give them a fixed forage resource, so you're almost kind of like limiting intake to some extent on those cows in terms of winter supplementation. So before I could give you a complete answer, I'd almost want to go through with you and sort of do RFI in reverse, because you've kind of got the outputs that we've shown under an RFI scenario that are equal, and then back up and see if there are intake differences or efficiency differences working kind of backwards. But I applaud you for going forward with your bulls and getting those tested for intake. Maybe you can tell us the answer next year.
Yeah, just a comment on the RFI evaluated in post-weaning test and compared to RFI evaluated on finishing steers. At least some of the data reported in the literature on finishing steers involves the use of hormonal growth hormones that have been used in those steers. So what you're measuring there is an effect of the response of those individuals a pharmacological dose of estradiol and trenbolone or whatever has been used. So I'm not sure about the studies that Betty and Gordy were just referring to, whether or not they actually used HDPs in those finishing steers, but that's a compounding effect. And my thinking at the moment is that we really need to be thinking about RFI as a post-weaning test defined condition where animals are in a linear growth phase, because they're biologically different from the finishing animals, and the issue with finishing animals also is a lot more variation in composition of grain in those animals, and so that's more difficult to account for, and that confounds the measurement of RFI. So my personal preference is to see perhaps what we refer to as RFI is this, we don't want to call it a trait, we want to call it a tool that we use to measure animals in a post-weaning test, and then perhaps if we're going to evaluate finishing animals, that we refer to that as efficiency of finishing or some other term, because I feel as though that's also going to be a
distribution.
Thank you again for having me.
Thanks, Daniel.